Nejdet Sezer vetoed an amendment to the law concerning minority foundations, he justified the move on the basis of his view that minority foundations are foreign foundations, as he described them. And they were, as such, very dangerous, his words. So, even though these are indigenous minority groups, they were or they are viewed as foreigners or foreign entities with, as far as the state are concerned. So the social control of the majority is the heavy burden of being the other. So you are, if you are an Armenian or a Syrian, you are the non-Turk, you are the other. Or in the Muslim state structures, or so in majority Muslim countries, you are the non-Muslim minority, or you are the Christian minority with certain boundaries. And I will come more into this later on. Now, in terms of cultural production, Armenians in the Middle East had a vibrant cultural also institutions, whether theater, literary production, writers, poets, and publishers, and so on and so forth, for decades. But with the civil war in Lebanon and decline of security and other political conflicts in the region, there was a mass out-migration to the West, mostly to North America, Australia, Canada, and to some extent Europe, but to less in numbers. So the cultural production is also affected in what's going on at the moment. And the third pillar, what I call the pillar, is the media. What used to be the newspaper publications, magazines, quite vibrant throughout the decades, but in decline in the last 20, 25 years in the Middle East, to a point where right now Armenian newspapers published, whether in Lebanon or Cairo or Syria, if there is any left, has become a duty or a national duty to continue. But in addition to the financial difficulties that they have, the new decline is readership, that you have less readers in terms of numbers who can read Western Armenian. Even the new generation seems to be more comfortable in Arabic or English as language of communication than Western Armenian, which is spoken in the Middle East. So Western Armenian, while it remains what I call kitchen language, it's spoken at home, but in terms of thinking and creating is not the language where people write, whether literary work or cultural production. In the past, actually, whenever the Armenian diaspora outside the Middle East, they needed newspaper editors or school teachers or theaters, companies or choir directors, whatnot. They always look to the Middle East for a cadre of people, teachers and editors and publishers who could help these communities. But unfortunately now, this is completely out of the question. The last bastion of producing Armenian teachers for Armenian schools in the diaspora was Aleppo. And unfortunately now that has been completely eliminated, unfortunately. For instance, schools in Kuwait, the Armenian school in Kuwait, virtually the entire faculty was sourced from by Armenians from Aleppo, who came to Kuwait to run the Armenian schools and serve as teachers there. Now, of course, with electronic media, this is also changing, versus, print media. And as we know better than me, that how this is a global trend where the internet and electronic self-broadcasting or publications are widely spread and used than print media. And this has also put further strain on Armenian newspapers and magazines and publishing houses in the Middle East as such, because people already get their news and information more easily and readily from the internet than waiting for the newspaper or the weekly to come to their house. Of course, this is with the exception of the Agos newspaper that I mentioned earlier in Turkey, which has a wider distribution, not only to Armenian readership, but to Turkish, they have Turkish readership who are interested in not only what goes on in the Armenian community, but the discourse that the newspaper has created in terms of the process of democratization in Turkey in general. Now, in terms of, these were sort of the three internal problems and issues. In terms of the external problems that the Armenian communities face in the Middle East, sort of what I call the imposed realities, because this is not of their own doing. It's the periodic but persistent interstate and regional crisis that we see happening. The unresolved, long, simmering and still going on conflicts. The security situation, the civil wars and conflicts. But most important, the economic difficulties that the communities face have put a big question mark on the long-term viability and the presence of the Armenian communities in the Middle East into question. The disruption, for instance, of the labor market in the last 20 years has greatly affected the socio-economic standing of the community, particularly in Lebanon, Iraq, Israel, Palestine, and Syria. For instance, in Lebanon, the shoemaking, the production of shoes, was predominantly an area run by Armenian traders and Armenian small workshops and so on for decades, from the 60s to the 70s. But now it's completely has been overtaken by the Shia community, so there is this major shift of one sector of the economy. Similarly, many of the factories in Lebanon were run by Armenian entrepreneurs or members of the Armenian community, but over the years this has changed because of, again, migration, but also because of the political and sociocultural changes that are taking place in the Middle East. So when you have the economic crisis or the decline of economic standing of the community, automatically this has led to migration, or immigration to other countries. Because the sort of, in inverted commas, the middle class is no longer there. So either you have the very rich members of the community, or the community that's struggling to survive, or don't have the means to leave the country, whether for financial reasons or for not being able to obtain visas or whatnot. So, the economic situation. The other area is Islamic militancy and state policies that's affecting the Armenians in particular and Christian communities in general. Again, to quote the Armenian Catholicos in Lebanon, Aram I, who is the highest ranking religious leader in the Middle East for Armenians, he was very blunt about the situation in the last few decades when he said, and I quote, "Christianity presents a picture of small islands scattered in the huge ocean of Islam," unquote. So in recent years, when you speak to senior clergymen, Christian community leaders, they express great concern about the future of their communities. Of course, publicly, they are very careful about their statements. But in more personal or closed circles, they are quite concerned about what's going on with especially growing Islamic militancy in this region, which, as we see in the last few years, even as recent as a few weeks ago, that Christian communities are being particularly targeted, especially in Syria and to a large extent in Egypt as well, but in Syria particularly, where they have been targeted churches or Christians, whether, you know, to for forced conversion or various other reasons, or bombing of, you know, in Iraq a few years ago, there were incidents of bombs at churches, the Armenian Catholic Church in Baghdad, and so on. While Islamic societies, as we all know, are generally very tolerant and respectful of Christian communities, the more vocal, religiously fervent segments of society tend to dominate the discourse in the Middle East today, it seems. And as one Egyptian lawyer put it, he said, even if you have the majority who are moderate Muslims, a minority of extremists can make big impact on them and poison their minds, unquote. A report prepared here, actually in Cambridge in 2010, provides a wider context to this problem. And by the way, I think it's, especially in the West, it's a politically incorrect topic to talk about the situation of Christian churches and Christian minorities in Islamic countries today, lest there is political offense or other problems. So in this report that I like to read a passage, it says, "Following independence from foreign occupation in the 50s and 60s in Arab countries, Christians had played a noticeable role in public life as politicians, senior public bureaucrats, intellectuals, and professionals. 50 years later, the situation had changed. As large numbers of Christians had migrated to the West, fewer remained to assume top positions in the state apparatuses. Islamic movements sweeping Arab countries had posed further challenge to them, especially concerning identity and citizenship rights. The use of Islamic terminology in media, social interactions, the public sphere, and political life in general had contributed to a sense of alienation among Christian communities," unquote. So communities in general, and Armenians in particular, see the threat posed by certain groups in society towards non-Muslims, however marginal they may be in these societies, as a cause of significant concern and serious factor endangering the long-term viability, as I said, of their communities in these countries. So there is big concern of what's going to happen to us in Lebanon, in Syria, in Egypt, in Iraq, and so on. Where is the future taking us? While it remains to be seen as to how the socio-political landscape in the Middle East will transition in the background of these mass protests or the so-called Arab Spring, a five-country survey between 2003 and 2006 by the Arab Barometer found that 56% of respondents agreed that men of religion should have influence over government decisions. Another survey in 2003 and 2004 found that half or more of four Arab republics agreed that nothing but Sharia law should be implemented by the government. Indeed, after cross-tabulating support for democracy and support for some kind of Islamic form of government, the generic pattern that emerges from the study shows that, and I quote, 40 to 45% of each public support secular democracy, while roughly the same proportion backs an Islamic form of democracy. Meanwhile, 5 to 10% of the public support secular authoritarianism, and the same proportion supports Islamic authoritarianism. As Al Diamond notes, and he said, we do not yet know, on the basis of the Arab Barometer data to date, what proportion of those who opt for democracy and for Islamic influence in government favor an understanding of democracy that includes, as an essential, not only majority rule, but also minority rights. So, basically, the point that I want to make is, in this context of the changing landscape of the Middle East and the Arab Spring and the movement for democracy, openness, I think the biggest challenge that we need to see is how minorities are going to be treated. What kind of rights would non-Muslim minorities, Christians and otherwise, are going to have in these countries. So far, I think as we can all see, what has happened or what has resulted out of these democracy or anti-dictatorship movements hasn't been very encouraging for non-Muslim minorities in the Middle East today. So it remains to be seen how they are going, how the new political system is going to be shaped, and how are they going to treat not only the dominant majority of society, but also the minorities. For sake of time, I'm going to skip the third issue, which I mentioned here and there, is the security and the military conflict that also affects the communities, not only because they are minority, but they are because they are part of majority. But the effects on, for instance, the Armenians is much more dire, because the communities are smaller and their resources are limited. So if few schools are completely destroyed, it's a major drain on resources or to rebuild their lives rather than, let's say, what happens with other parts of the country. So Syria, obviously, it's a major concern where there is concern that what has been lost, in this case with the Armenian community, it might never be reconstructed or replaced. It has come to that point of no return. So on that rather maybe pessimistic note, I'll stop here and open up for discussion.
Thank you very much for this rich, both historical and modern, actually Armenian story. So who has questions?
I just want to start off, thank you for that account, although I must say it makes us very sad. But, under this kind of pressure, you mentioned the three pillars and the church being one. What is the state of relations between the churches in the Middle East and the Armenians in particular? Can they act as a group, or are they still separated and speaking on their own?
I think there is definitely, especially in the last few years, there is definite cooperation and continued communication on several levels. There is ongoing discussions or meetings among the patriarchs in the Middle East, for instance, Armenian, Syrian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, the Patriarchy of Antioch, and so generally, the Coptic Church and so on. So there is an ongoing communication on the leadership level, but there's also on other local levels, there is continued discussion of their situations and how they can find solutions or remedies to what they face. Plus, on the wider ecumenical level, there is the Middle East Council of Churches, which also includes, unlike the word Council of Churches, it includes the Catholic as well as Evangelical and Orthodox churches. So there is that ongoing cooperation.
Can I follow on from that? There are three Antiochians sitting here in a room, and obviously we're very intimately involved and concerned with what's going on in Syria and Lebanon. If the Western churches speak out, is that a help or a hindrance?
Yeah, as I said, this is a quite sensitive issue, I believe, on a number of levels. And it has to be very carefully, in my view, thought through. Because one of the problems vis-a-vis more politicized Islamic groups, one of the problems that Christians in the Middle East who are natives of these countries, they are perceived as Western entities within the Middle East, as if they were exported or imported, to these lands. While all along they've been there, throughout history, as indigenous, communities. So we have to bear in mind this aspect that if the churches in the West are making pronouncements, it doesn't fuel sort of this kind of conception in local society that, we are right, but this, there's a connection. Now, on the other hand, this doesn't mean that there are legitimate issues and problems that the communities in the Middle East, Christian communities need a lot of help. Perhaps maybe not on the public side, but on more on the diplomatic or on the political or policy formation level. I know I've spoken to a number of high-ranking clergy and bishops who, on one-on-one, they're very, for instance, unhappy. I hope this is off the record. With, for instance,
No, it's still on.